Welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker dealer depository service. We've been here a long time doing the right thing, we believe, and we're always buying and selling all forms of precious metals and scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds, coins, collections, and we specialize in investment portfolios. We have one of the finest physical facilities in the nation, which should matter. It's getting interesting more and more with the internet. We run into this, you know, people like rely on reviews so much on the internet, and you get people that will, you know, abuse that system pretty readily. And it's just an interesting concept. You can take, the biggest problem is you get, you know, the internet doesn't show you how profound a business is or tell much about them when people, you know, go and they look up reviews. And I've looked at, you know, Yelp or something for meals at a place where, you know, really phenomenal places. There's a breakfast place where we go and out by where we live. And I mean, you get these, yeah, I don't know. I basically what I'm getting at is there's people that really abuse the system, people that are in business. They leave negative reviews, false negatives. We've had our experience with that, with the guy up the road who's operating out of a tiny little old school pawn shop, just real low budget. You know, the guys have tattoos and bandanas, and you know, we've never played by those rules, but we were just we actually just discovered and were notified from an inside source recently that we've been experiencing some of this stuff, and it's frustrating, and it's hard to deal with because the big, you know, the corporate America, Google and stuff, doesn't necessarily leave an opt out for it. I think the best thing that we can do and that we've done in the past is just ask our customers that have had a positive experience to go on Google or Yahoo or the Better Business Bureau and just post a positive review. What's ironic is we've done literally over 300,000 individual transactions since we began this business over 20 years ago. And that, of course, includes online sales as well. But you know, you do that many transactions and you don't have a lot of reviews. I mean, people in general, I had the pleasure, I suppose you call it, of studying statistics in college. Well, one thing that they taught or made very clear was that people that leave reviews voluntarily often have a bias. I mean, they're either emotionally angry. In fact, they say that people generally, it's sort of like the saying when you own a business, a happy customer might tell one or two people if you're lucky. An unhappy customer will tell 7 to 12, depending on the study, and probably depending on how unhappy they are. Happy customers don't go out and necessarily tell people they're happy on especially Google reviews or whatever, because if you think about it, if you go to a business and you have a positive experience, it's what you expect. You expected it to go good. You expected it to be fine. If it doesn't go good, you didn't expect that. You're in shock. And then, you know, sometimes you'll respond that way, which is why a lot of times the review stuff is not well balanced. And we've got a lot of reviews that are pretty in-depth and very complimentary, and they make a lot of sense about estates and, you know, and people shopping around and landing on us and figuring out we're the best and all that. So we have worked hard over the years to try to establish that reputation. And so we're building some flyers up. I think we're going to start handing out to our preferred customers, kind of an invitation and gift offer for people who do post. And I have offered this in the past, but I'll go ahead and do it again, I guess, on the show today. If you want to go on Google and leave a positive, like a 5-star review for us, we will give you a Silver Eagle or a Morgan Silver Dollar. First, all you have to do is go leave the review, and then contact us, verify it, and we'll go ahead and do that for you. Now, that's, you know, that's the price of our reputation to us, and that's really the value of our customers, man. I cannot even describe to you, as a family business owner and being in business all these years, I was with my son last night. And we have an inside source that was explaining to us. I mean, we get like 3 or 4 really good reviews, and then you'll get one negative on Google that just doesn't make any sense. It's like, it's just not even reasonable. It doesn't make sense. It's just garble babble. But it doesn't matter. It lowers your ratings. And I was talking to my son last night, and he's like, "What's wrong?" I said, "Man, it just breaks my heart." You know, I said, you spend your whole life, basically, you pour your whole lifeblood into this, into your family business. You do everything you can to do what's right, to help others, to be good, to operate with integrity. And then people can just go out and maim your reputation, like, with fallacy. And the biggest problem is they say 88% of people read online reviews as if it was a personal recommendation from a close friend. I mean, folks, seriously, it's kind of like watching the news and believing what you're seeing. It is. By the time it hits the news, it's so filtered and messed with. So anyway, that was kind of a bummer for us. But, you know, it just, we really do care. I can assure you no one cares more than we do. We are human. We have had different experiences over the years, I'll put it that way. And I've had employees that probably shouldn't be here and that I've allowed to last too long just out of grace and kindness. One thing I learned, you know, the end of every year, I feel that God gives me a lesson for the year, and I really should write them down. But I'll never forget, the end of 2014 was the lesson I felt God gave me was, you can't change people. Of course, God can and they can, but you can't. And so if you have a friend or an employee or a relative that just, you know, they have an area in their life you really wish they'd change, you seriously should not even bother trying. I mean, you can pray for them, you can be kind to them, but you can't change people. People do not change unless without, you know, outside resources, typically spiritually, occasionally otherwise. But then there are also a lot of aspects of a person's personality that it just is what it is. You can't put in our business, if you have somebody that you need to list items on the online, and that requires them to operate at a high-speed rate with incredible accuracy and an excellent articulate, you know, vernacular and vocabulary. If they have it, they have it. If they don't, they don't. You can't teach that to people. And so that's a long response to the fact that, yeah, I've let some people hang around here all the years, or over years at times that probably shouldn't have. But overall, it's so important to us that we treat people right and do the right thing. And occasionally you're going to have misunderstandings and stuff. But anyway, where we're at right now, folks, if you want to go online and you want to do a Google review for us, preferably like positive 5-star, we'll give you a free silver dollar or a silver eagle. If you're out of town, that's fine. Just call. We'll go on, we'll verify it's there, we'll mail it to you. And that's a pretty good deal. I mean, people call in to other, I remember the American Advisor of the Gold Line radio show. I mean, people would call in for a free silver Kennedy half dollar, which is worth, you know, Maybe at the time it was maybe $6. Now it's probably, at the time it was probably $3. Now they're probably $6. We're talking gifts, you know, that we're giving away for one free review that's, you know, worth over $20 of liquid cash. We also are building a flyer that if you leave three reviews on like Google, Yahoo, Better Business Bureau, we'll double that up. So it's up to you. If that interests you, please do it. We could sure use it. We'd appreciate it. Boy, it matters to us, folks. It really does. And what's really interesting is, I guess I'm a little bit of an old cat. You know, I built this business the old way. You know, I built it from the ground up. I used to travel to buy. I literally, in my business, I went door to door. I ran little ads and I traveled around and I would go to people's homes and do business. And then as my reputation grew a little bit, I got business cards out and started to meet pawn shops, antique shops, and estate attorneys and getting to know, you know, them and getting my hands in a little more involved in coin collecting and in buying estates. And, you know, it was a hobby that I loved, and it just grew and grew. And I never really intended it to get to where it is today, but it is my heart and soul. And I'll tell you, folks, my love of coins is really hard to explain if you just don't have it. I grew up, you know, I was pretty athletic, but I had some, you know, I had my share of a rough life, I guess I'd tell you. And, you know, I never was a hobby guy. People would say, what are your hobbies? I'd be like, I don't know, I ride my bike or, you know, and then later, I guess I used to lift weights. I was pretty good at that. But it wasn't until God gave me coins that I just fell in love with them. I mean, I fell in love with the history. I fell in love with the beauty. I fell in love with the detail. I fell in love with the value of the compact wealth. I fell in love with the investment portion. I have to admit, I'm a collector at heart, but if it wasn't for the value side of it, I don't think I'd have any interest in it because I was a banker. You know, I was a money man. And it's just where God's put me over the years. And I just love the value. I love, you know, the history in your hands. We have got coins that we made in this country, folks, that are so beautiful. And now we make trash. We make tin garbage. I mean, it is just, you just have pocketfuls of rubbish. And this is what all the foreign countries have gone to. And that's because our Federal Reserve wants to make positive that they do not invest a penny, or they invest the absolute minimum amount of money into creating money. And money, that's just the opposite of what our founding fathers told us it should be, and what the Bible tells it should be, and what it should be. It should be intrinsic in value in and of itself. So a coin should have silver in it or gold in it, and that is the value of the coin. You can stamp a face value on it, but the actual value is in the intrinsic element that's in that coin, the intrinsic value of the coin. And they've stripped all this away. And folks, if I could even open your eyes to help you even comprehend what has happened to us. I mean, we get caught up in all the inner workings of the world and all the chaos swirling around Trump and all of the immorality and the guns and the shootings and the hatred and the divisiveness. And do you know, folks, it all comes from falling away from God. And I will tell you, country after country has done this. You can go through two 200-year cycles of Rome, and you can watch their coins go from being magnificently filled with an intrinsic product like gold or silver, and then you can watch them debase all the way down to nothing. And at the same time, those are the times these countries literally collapsed in and upon themselves. Then you get a full collapse of Rome and an absolute complete rebuild. And with that rebuild comes a new coinage, big gold coins, big silver coins. these are the times that those nations stood strongest. Our nation is hands down the finest, greatest nation that has ever set foot, if you want to call it that, on planet Earth. There is nothing like it, bar none. But at the same time, I will say that we are in a strained, a very strained state. And in the history of nations, a man I read a book from many years ago who described the age of nations and their maturity. And I read this years back before things got so chaotic. He said that we were heading into what they call the teenage stage of a nation around 200 years. And it's also based on, you know, industrialization and taxation, whatever. So we are at a teenage stage, okay? Well, the problem is if you apply all of the things you would apply to a teenager, you can see what's affecting our nation. For example, if you have children, I will tell you this. If you say to them, you show me your friends, I will show you your future. I guarantee you, you're right. Who we associate dictates who we become. On the extreme end of it, we also, who we're at war with, who we are embattled with, is who we become as well. It's who we're exposing ourselves to, and it's who is affecting our thought processes. So if we look at the nation of America from twofold, one is who are our enemies and who are our friends. And I don't mean allies as other nations, although that does have an impact. We can throw that in as a third component. But we look at who we're letting in our country, why we're letting them in, how tolerant are we of them. So let's look at those three real quickly to kind of determine, show me your friends, I'll show you your future, okay? So first of all, let's go world allies. Okay, we are closest with, you know, England and Europe and those types of nations. Of course, Israel, which is one of our positives. But when you go to England and France and Spain and Italy and all this, folks, Germany, these are true allies. They are becoming incredibly liberalized, right? Just absolute lacking morality. The moral is just slipping and slipping and slipping away. And obviously, we emulate this. How many times have you heard politicians, or especially on the left, say, well, our taxes aren't that bad. Look at Switzerland. Look at the Netherlands. Well, France had a 75% high tax rate. Well, folks, if you look at their economies and you realize they have just been shredded, fallen apart, the rich have fled? How about that? The rich have fled France when they jacked the tax rate up to 75%. They also added an asset tax of 1%. So if you're worth $1 million, you get the pleasure of paying $10,000 a year to the French government. You know, you might think, well, $1 million, that's a lot. Most people don't have that. I think you'd be surprised. I mean, I have a friend I talked to yesterday that is well up in the government, and, you know, he lives okay. I found out he's got $1 million in his government, you know, retirement fund. Like, wow, you know, I mean, I wouldn't have expected that. But the fact of the matter is, these countries are our allies. They influence our opinions. They influence our politics. They have become unchurched. I learned back in the maybe 80s or 90s that at that time they said that England only had 4% of its population that went to church. And now, folks, and I don't know if I can stand behind that statistic. It just sticks in my head. It may have been, you know, 4% or evangelicals or whatever. I don't know. But what I do know at the time, I really think it was those that go to church. But what I do know at the time is I thought, wow, thank God America's not like this. Well, folks, our church population continues to decline and decline and decline. And it is, oh, it is such an antagonist towards immorality and deception. I mean, for those of you who are born-again believers or who believe in God and the Bible, I mean, really believe, not, you know, church-going Christians who never open their word and don't know what it says. But for those of you who are, who have had a period of time in your life where you've backslidden and then come back, I can tell you, I had an experience with this back when I got out of college. I was, in college, just, studying and engrossed in the word. And then my wife, I got married extremely early. I was married at 20, and we had a child, and her rheumatoid exploded, and I started to take, 20 credits of per quarter of 400 level mathematics, and I was working full time, and I had to detach myself from all Christian activities because I was just doing what I had to do to make ends meet, to feed the family and rush my degree. And, so then once we got out, I went to Seattle and stayed with a friend for a few weeks. All I had to my name at the time was a mountain bike and a pair of skis. I grew up skiing in Montana from the time I could walk. In college, I was an instructor by accident because I tried to take a ski class and they saw how well I skied and they decided to make me an instructor. And, so I went, stayed with a friend for a few weeks, sold those two assets, got a job, eventually saved enough money a month later to move my family out to the coast. And then we ended up in Vancouver, Washington for a year, the Portland area. And my wife was extremely ill, bedridden pretty much permanently, and we just could not get to church. We were broke. We weren't, we had these crazy student loans. You get the story. I fell away from God completely. We tried to find a church. It was hard. People couldn't relate to my 20-year-old wife who was suffering from severe rheumatoid arthritis. There was a terrible lack of compassion from the older members of these churches because they couldn't see it on the outside. It was pretty rough. So I fell away from God. I mean, I really fell away so fast I couldn't even believe it. A year and a half, 2 years later, we moved back to Montana. I was living in a mobile home, living the dream in a mobile home out in the Dust Bowl Valley of Helena, Montana. The dust was so bad there in the summer, you could be up in the city and just look out and just see this cloud of dust that it's a wonder we didn't all choke and die to death. There was so much dust, it ruined our cars. But anyway, one day a pastor came knocking on the door, and one thing led to the next, and I was back into church. And it wasn't the exact church denomination I would probably recommend, but I started to get back in the Word, and I was like, wow, in a year and a half, even though I had so much Scripture memorized, I had fallen so far from grace. I had been deceived by the devil. I started to become tolerant of immoral behavior that offends God, a behavior that's an affront to God. And it's just so easy to do that. And that's what happens when you fall away. So again, I guess that's not quite exactly show me your friends, I'll show you your future, but show me your lack of friends too, and I'll show you your future. So basically with America, we've got the influence of the globe. We were the Christian pinnacle, the Christian example. We were the light on a hill. Okay, for the world. We really have had a great impact. I mean, Jesus Christ himself had the greatest impact of all. As a man on earth, we all know about Billy Graham's passing lately. What an incredible impact. They say he preached to over 200 million people. And he just had an authority, and God paved a way for him. And there's a good lesson there. What made Billy Graham effective was he knew when to engage, when not to engage, how to engage, how not to engage. He knew that the gospel of Christ was the power. He knew that he was just sharing the gospel. He was a messenger. Okay, so often, folks, we get personally involved. And what I mean by that, obviously you're going to, but what I mean is we fight Christ's battles for him. Okay, we are, you know, his representatives. But if people hate Jesus Christ, they're not going to change their mind based on an argument or some, you know, smart little quip you have for them. Billy Graham knew when not to say something and when to say something. When he did say something, he kept it very simple. He kept it very scriptural, very pure, and he just had a wonderful way. He was an ambassador. He was able to go places that no man, no American man could ever go. He shared the gospel in nations like you cannot believe. He started revivals in communist countries. Why some of these communist leaders left and even let him go there, I don't know. But that is who we're supposed to be. That is how we're supposed to represent Christ. We're supposed to be a positive aroma. We're supposed to be the best people that we can be to reach out that way. So, again, I've spoken recently that instead of gun laws and all these crazy laws, the real problem in America is the spiritual decline. And then I've said, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. America's in a teenage state, okay? We are in a transitional state. The teenage state in a human life is a critical state. It's a critical stage. It's a dangerous stage. So much bad can happen. So much good can happen. It's a fragile state. It's when a teenager is trying to discover who they are. And what do? They break away. If they're raised Christian, folks, they break away from their Christian faith. And it kills parents. It drives them nuts. But they have to do it. You know why? Because, and I'm not saying it happens every time, but it's very common. Because they've got to make that faith their own. So they get to a point where they say, this is what we've been told all along. This is what I've been told all along. And I've believed it. I've taken it in, hook, line, and sinker. They're all in. And then one day they have their friends questioning them. And, you know, again, show me your friends, show you your future. They have their friends questioning and chipping away. And they're looking at the world and they're saying, well, how do I know this is right? I've never had a choice. This is just what was given to me. The Bible says, you know, that if you raise a child up in the way they should go, they will not depart from it, or instruct the child, whatever. That's a tricky verse, but it basically means that they're going to stay on course if you do it right. As a parent, what kills children is hypocrisy. Do not get caught up in legalism, and I'm going to try to get to Matthew 5 and touch on that. Okay, so three main facets that have affected our nation. I apologize. Number one is our allies, our friends. Okay. Number two, the people that we are allowing into this country, who are they? Do they love America? No, they want welfare. Do they love God? Rarely now. I mean, we've got Muslims pouring in by the truckload. They have what's called a fatwa where they literally have jihad through population overgrowth. They hate America. We're the great white Satan. But we're opening the doors. We've got our leadership allowing this crazy, you know, unbelievable behavior to come into our country, and they want more and more and more. Why? Well, by golly, they want socialism. So they're selling us out. They're literally selling us out. And it, folks, it, trust me, at the core, who's adapting to who? Are these people coming to our country being forced to learn our language, being forced to adopt our culture, or are we molding to them? We have entire Spanish-speaking schools, and we have entire communities dedicated to the Vietnamese or Philippines, or even more so, probably the worst, is Middle Eastern Islamic culture. We are just drinking this stuff up like Kool-Aid. We're, folks, this is what's tearing us apart. In the last most effective, most destructive aspect of this, folks, is our rejection of the Word of God that really took root and took hold in the 60s. You know, it's hard to say exactly how we got there, but I can always back up and I can show you, in my opinion, some of the things that took place throughout the history of this nation. I believe that the Civil War had a terrible impact on this country. It separated the country. It cost us the lives of 700,000 men. That's the lives. That's not counting those. They say another 50% of that number were left maimed and handicapped and permanently damaged for the rest of their life. So you have the death or destruction, if you will, or effect of leadership on a million men in a nation with a population of around 16 million people. So, you know, and I've done this math before, but do it with me. You got 16 million people in a country. Let's just say half are female and half are male. That's probably a pretty good guess. That means there's 8 million males. Okay. Now, out of those 8 million males, let's assume, because this is how statistics typically work, half are of adult childbearing age and half are either too old or too young. That's typical. That gives you about 4 million men that can, you know, that are parenting age. However, in America at that time, it was different because we were a rapid growing nation and we had a higher concentration of children. It's a statistical fact. We had a tremendous number of children around the time of the Civil War. Okay. And so really there was probably about 3 million men that were of child rearing age. Out of that 3 million men, you have a million that were lost in one form or another. You have 700,000 that just flat out died in the Civil War. And then you have another 300 plus thousand that were severely maimed or hurt or handicapped or whatever, that limited their ability to resume their leadership capabilities as a father, et cetera, and community leader. So that's 33% of men who were of childbearing age, the ability to rear families, et cetera. Now, if you lose a third of those men, what happens is the women take over. Nothing against women, but they've shown the voting tendencies of women is far skewed from men. Women will vote, you know, like 87% Democrat. All a politician has to do is talk about children and family, and they've got the woman's vote. Folks, my apologies. I'm just repeating what is sound, statistically proven fact. Men, on the other hand, typically vote 27 to 35% Democrat. Back then, it was different, a different thought process. A Democrat back then, there were flat American views that were just non-negotiable under any circumstances. Now, all of this stuff is up for challenge. Why? Show me your friends. I'll show you your future. We're being influenced by all these other countries, and now we are absolutely being influenced by third world countries. when Donald Trump refers to countries like Haiti as an S-hole, you know, the S-word, hole, in other words, a dump, a junk hole, a really crappy place, the left is, oh my gosh, they're just up in arms. They're so offended. And it's like, give me a break, folks. These places are terrible. Obama brought in the concept of the exemption or the rejection, I'm sorry, of what we call American exceptionalism. Really, the third wheel that has destroyed this country or is destroying it is our political leadership. It's the rejection of God, yes, but the political leadership that's risen up out of it is terrifying. You have the damage that's been done by Obama. You have these left-wing radical socialistic followers of Saul Alinsky. They are a ruthless bunch dedicated to the absolute demolition of the United States of America. I don't care what you say, if you disagree with me. There's no question about it. I mean, they literally, folks, right now, they're talking about passing a law where they can seize your guns and then let you go through due process and try to get them back. Okay? Now, I want you to think about it. It's pretty rare when you see a situation where our government wants to combine the abuse and neglect and rejection of two constitutional amendments out of the Bill of Rights in one fell swoop. I can't think of another situation. So here's what you got. The Fourth Amendment, the protection against illegal search and seizure. The Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. Now you've got Trump saying, hey, here's a great idea. How about we throw out the Fourth Amendment in order to throw out the Second Amendment? How about we do illegal seizure of guns, which Americans have a right to own? Folks, I cannot even comprehend this stupid argument that the right to bear arms, it doesn't give you the right to bear arms. Oh, you can't have an assault rifle, which is a stupid name. I mean, folks, technology advances, right? Yeah, back then we had musket rifles and all that, but so did they, okay, our government. We would have had cannons, and so did they. Now our government's got F-16 fighter jets and every kind of radar and laser and who knows what and tanks and everything else. We could never stand against our country if it decided to spin tyrannical. If we got taken over from the inside, which, by the way, we are. This country will not, this country does not require an outsider to break us down and tear us down. We're doing just fine ourselves. When we bring in leaders as the result of a radical socialistic media, which, you know, I had some studies a while back that I went through, and essentially most journalists are extremely emotionally unstable, to put it lightly. They have skewed perceptions of reality. They jump to conclusions without facts, just the opposite of what you would think. So what happens is they find the story they want to write, and then they go twist the facts to bring you the story they want to write. They don't care about truth in most cases. This is what we've become, frankly, scary. I mean, you know, I was thinking yesterday, I thought, you know, man, I wonder if people listen to my show and I'm ranting and raving, and I wonder if they just go, man, this guy's negative, you know? And I'm like, am I not supposed to be doing this, as far as, like, am I supposed to be more positive? And I mean, this is just the way I see it, okay? I'm concerned. I'm passionate. I love America. I care, okay? And I see threats. And when you have Donald Trump doing what he's doing, you know, I hope he's exercising wisdom. And here's what I mean by that. He's in a pickle. He's in a bind. The pressure of the media is intense. We've got little children yelling at legislators, telling them how to legislate. And their parents are applauding them. And the media is saying, isn't this cute? We've got little children, you know, now telling us how to run our government. That, you know, communists use children to change the world because they'll do whatever you tell them. These kids aren't coming out on their own. They're guided. They're led. They're coached. So maybe Trump's kicking back, letting this stuff blow by. Maybe he doesn't intend to do some of the things he says, I hope. Maybe he knows that the legislature will never pass these things. But the left wants to take away all your guns. The universal background check, folks, the problem is, you know, it makes great sense. But who sets the standards and what are they? What happens when it messes up? What happens when, you know, there's a twisted fact? What happens when you end up on their too dangerous to own a gun database because you go to the school when your kids are there and you have a problem with the principal and you say, look, the way that you guys are educating my child is not good enough, and you get in their face, which happens, and you have a bunch of hysterical liberal socialists go crazy and say, man, I really felt threatened by that guy. We're going to get him on that database now. He could easily shoot up our school, even though there's no evidence at all, and out come the police, and all your guns get seized, and an order gets placed against you that says you cannot possess any firearms and you can't be near firearms and you haven't broken any laws and you probably haven't even made threats. All they have to do is say, this guy seems emotionally unstable. You know, Obama went after over and over and over our veterans. He said they're the most dangerous people out there, our veterans. People who fought, bled, and died for the freedom of this nation. Barack Obama said they were our greatest threat. So what happens when they get this database and all you got to do is be an educator and you can get, you know, a veteran put on the list? Or what happens when somebody who's so anti-gun sees a guy like I did the other day in a restaurant carrying a sidearm tucked in his pants? Oh, man, they're going to freak. Oh, my gosh, that guy's got a gun. He's a threat. He's dangerous because they're not raised to respect guns properly. That's the problem with this database system. Universal background checks, what are they looking for? How about the mental illness clause? Well, if they're mentally ill, they can't have a gun. Okay, who dictates how mentally ill is mentally ill? 25% of America is on antidepressants. Well, that's, you know, they could say they're mentally ill. There goes the gun rights of 25% of the population. Somebody goes through a hard time. They have a loss in the family. They have some, they're really emotionally struggling. They go see a counselor to get help. They're mentally ill now, right? Can't give them a gun. They're dangerous. Folks, this, it's all designed to progressively, gradually confiscate your weapons. Take away our weapons and we've got nothing. The Emperor of Japan made a statement after World War II or somewhere in that arena that they actually thought of trying an on-soil attack of America. The number one deterrent was that they got statistics on how many Americans own guns, and especially rifles. And they were like, no way. You know, and no one can come up with a good excuse for why we need an assault rifle because they say you need one bullet to kill a deer. And they say, well, you know, it is for self-defense. You know, the Second Amendment's just for self-defense. Yeah, against a tyrannical overthrow of your nation, which is why the well-regulated militia, because they know that's necessary. But then they say, well, handguns are dangerous and assault rifles are dangerous. So they want to give you some bolt action 30-06 to defend your family with? You know much about guns? You want to be standing in the dark in the hallway with someone in your house with your bolt action 30-06 trying to shoot that guy? Sorry, folks, it ain't going to work. And here's the other thing. You know, it's like they say, don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Well, don't bring a pistol to an AR-15 fight. What if someone comes after you and they've got more powerful weaponry? Folks, I don't care. The bottom line is we have a right to bear arms, and we've got to work around it. We've got to look at the morality breakdown of this nation. And you know what? No one's talking about it anymore. And we're in the middle of this chaos and mayhem. That's frankly unbelievable. I mean, frankly, this is unbelievable. Trump, you know, he's definitely a catalyst. There's some chaos going on there, folks. I will break the news to you. It ain't good. It's troublesome. I think you probably all agree with me, I suspect, just from talking to a few of you here and there. You know, we've got, I mean, there's always something, isn't there? What do we got now? Oh, the steel embargo, the steel tariffs. And everybody's like, oh, they're so bad. They're so horrible. Well, you know, the left, I mean, folks, so here's the deal. The bottom line is China and other countries are importing so much steel that they're ruining our steel business. No steel, no country. You ruin our steel business, we can't build anything without dependency on other nations. We're done. Okay? As a side note, Putin comes out yesterday or whatever and says that they now have a nuclear warhead that can subvert every single one of our Star Wars defense systems. In other words, we will not be able to stop it. And I kind of believe him. Because all it's got to do is stay low enough and fast enough, and we can't do it. And that's what it does. So now we got that issue. Why do we got that issue? We got that issue because we're standing up to North Korea, and we're basically saying, if North Korea steps out of line, we will take care of business. And people are like, oh, man, then you go to war with China and Russia. And then people have been saying, well, you know, I think we're prepared militarily. Nah, we're not. Obama tore our military down, folks, to a level of the 1950s. Okay, what does that mean? After World War II, we depleted everything we had, everything. We were out, done, spent. Obama left us back at that point. Trump was putting in these bills for all this nuclear development, nuclear warhead development. Everybody's like, oh, he's a crazed maniac. What's he doing? Well, now we know what he's doing, because guess what? He just might be getting some confidential information that you and I don't get. And the foolish press it always thinks we need to know everything. We don't need to know everything. We can't. That'd be the dumbest thing ever. And I think presidents in the past have done that, and they've absolutely destroyed us by doing it. So now we've got a legitimate threat from Putin. You know, and all this garbage, this anti-Russia rhetoric, and, oh, they worked with the Russians to get elected. Oh, yeah. We really see a lot of cooperation from them, don't we? I mean, they're manifesting themselves as our greatest enemy. Romney sat in his debate with Obama and said, Russia's our greatest enemy. And then Obama sarcastically said, well, the 80s want their foreign policy back. And, you know, and Obama's the one that said ISIS was the JV team. And what he meant by that is they're no threat. They're not serious. But what he really meant was, hey, lay off of my friends. Let them build up. Let them get strong enough to start killing Americans around the world and pose a great threat to the soil of this nation. Word has it, Obama was one arrogant bugger, tough to deal with. You can imagine he comes across that way to me, and I do believe it for sure. So, needless to say, that's where we're at. We're at the teenage stage of this nation. We're in crisis, and I'm afraid that we're not making the right decisions. A good teenager will make some mistakes. They'll turn around. They'll straighten up. This country needs a revival. The political divisiveness and division in this nation, which was warned, oh, was it ever warned against by our founding fathers? Man, did they try to lay this stuff down. Brilliant, brilliant men. Folks, we don't realize we're not smarter because we've got more technology. If we're so smart, look at our people. Everyone's walking around with a stupid little box in their hands, staring at it, texting, you know, not paying attention. People literally get run over in major city streets because they're not looking for cars because they're too busy with their head in this box. And then we go home and we get on our other box and we start typing a bunch of stuff on the computer. And then we go turn on the other box and watch TV and let them put whatever filth they want into our heads. Oh, yeah, we're real smart, all right. I mean, we're destroying ourselves as a nation. We've got excessive obesity like never before. I mean, we're sick. We use more medication than anyone in the world, and now we've got this stupid drug war coming on. The reason the drug war is on fire is because 95% of the resources of the DEA and government were previously dedicated to the war on marijuana. Okay, now marijuana is being legalized. They need a new drug war. So they're going to make an opioid crisis. They're going to push people out on the streets. I mean, folks, they got to have a drug war. They got to keep the cash flowing. Drugs have issues, don't get me wrong, but the war against them, the way we fight it, is terrible. Then Trump saying that drug dealers need to be killed, murdered, executed. Wow, that's okay. That's interesting. You know, we have to be careful about legislating morality. Jesus said in Matthew 5:17, do not think that I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but fulfill it. And then he goes on and when he talks about, you know, the fact that if you even think hatred for somebody in your mind, you've already committed murder. If you think lustfully about a woman in your mind or a man, you've already committed adultery. The point of that is each and every single one of us are sinners. The point isn't that we're supposed to point our fingers and be judgmental towards each other. And he does, when he says be perfect at the end of Matthew 5 as your Father in heaven is perfect, it means be whole of mind, be settled, be convicted. You cannot be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. You can't be perfect on earth. The point is we're human. We need to have a level of godly tolerance and understanding, okay? Now, all these things are a distraction. I mean, they are a massive distraction. They keep our eyes off of what is real. We've seen markets going all over the place. We've got, you know, I didn't even get a chance to talk about the steel tariffs. I can tell you about, real quick, copper pipes from China. Steel from China is not the same as steel from the U.S. Good. Back in the 90s, a bunch of copper pipe came to Spokane from China, a lot cheaper. They put it in all kinds of houses. You know what happened? That pipe leaked. Not only did it leaked everywhere. It was built so poorly and molded so cheaply that it was weeping water out all over. They had to go through brand new homes and tear out all the copper pipe and replace it with American copper pipe. You know, so this is why and how they make stuff so cheap. And yes, it does hurt our nation, and it will. The biggest problem is the cost will carry on to the consumer. But I mean, we really need to be building this stuff for ourselves. It does matter. And again, I wish I could have spent some time on the financial ramifications of what is going on in this world, folks. I will tell you, I have just, you know, I don't even know where to begin. I said the other day, there's some of you that are convicted. You know you need to make that move. You know you need to get your money in God's financial vehicles. Give us a call, 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. There's nothing in the world like it, period. Okay? I mean, God made it a certain way. The world's economic and political climates are have been different since 9/11. I've talked about the Mystery Babylon thing. I mean, 9/11, look at where we're at. What in the world has happened to us? We've become our enemy. Show you, you know, I said, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Show me your enemies. People stoop to the level of their enemies, don't they? The enemy dictates morality. Isn't that terrible? Well, guess what? Here we are. Our financial markets and currencies have been melting down, losing money, spending power, and there's a, you know, it's imminently impacting U.S. markets. Precious metals have proven to be literally, folks, timeless, permanent, respected, pinnacle forms of true wealth and capital preservation in every civilized society and have endured every hardship throughout human history. Precious metals have grown in value by nearly 4,000% in the 40-plus years since they were deregulated. Actually, it's over that, in 71. It's almost 100% per year average. You know, and I could go on. They've grown like crazy. They're anonymous. They're transportable. They're liquid, you know. Your money's up, then your money's down. It's all over, but it's still fiat currency. God just made a simple system. You want simplicity, you want what's right, we'll help you do it. We build solid portfolios. Don't put it all in, put some in. Diversify yourself. Get into something solid. This is what we do. We have certified coins by independent third-party grading services that have performance levels that are tremendous, okay? We've got precious metals. We've got old U.S. gold coins that trade as bullion. Antiques, 100-and-some-year-old coins that trade as one-ounce bullion. I mean, it's just where the market is right now. Take advantage of it. You know, the 20s, the 10s, the 5s, $5 gold pieces, whatever. I wish I had a little more time. We've got the price of goods increasing while interest rates stay low. You know, anyway, we're out of time. It's me again. Friday. Have a great weekend. Super appreciate you. Please go online, do the Google review, and get your free silver dollar. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.